Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No. We're going to teabag fight. Yeah.
You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's The Session. Thanks for joining us here on a Monday night. I really appreciate it. Hope you guys are having a good week and hope this show gets you off to a good beer drinking week and, more importantly, the weekend. We are joined by Exhibit A Brewing Company out of Framingham, Massachusetts. This is Kelsey and Matt. What's going on, guys? Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate it. Got the beer last week or whatever. It's been hanging out super cold in my fridge. And I'm very excited for it because I saw you not only have a Kolsch, but a Mexican-style lager. And I knew right away the show was going to be good. I knew right away that you guys were going to be a fun group to talk to because those are two of my favorite styles. And what I'm just going to do is actually just bust open this Kolsch right now, and we can talk a little bit about your background, and we'll get into the beer a little bit. But how did you guys end up starting Exhibit A Brewing? Or are you, you know, what's the what's your history there with the brewery?
So with a partner, I started this company, and nice. Actually Kelsey was our first hire, and and still with us, of course, 5 years later. Exhibit A was founded in 2015 officially, but we opened in 2016 and at 81 Morton Street, the former location of Jack's Abbey. And I hired Kelsey to kind of lead our marketing and kind of tap room approach to the part of our business. And
okay.
I was going to take over all the production.
Yeah.
We have since added so many people to this team to assist in those ventures. Kelsey.
You got to do it.
Yeah. What do you say?
Yeah. Well, I came from like a video producer, media graphic design background, and worked for several years for a craft beer retail franchise.
Oh,
and
nice.
helped them grow from like a 2-store business to 26 stores across the country. Excellent. And so I had, you know, some experience in the front of house kind of retail side of things. And so when Matthew put the word out there that he was looking for you know, somebody to kind of take over that portion of the business, I was like, hey, I could do that. and I came in and I said, first thing I said is, your logo's crap. Like, we need a new logo.
No, did you really?
And he fixed it. Yeah, he fixed it.
In those words? Please tell me it was those specific words, because
I think I was a little nervous still, so okay. I was a little more genteel about it.
Okay. All right. Because that would take.
To be clear, I was not in love with the original logo. So.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. My original logo for my other show was just like my wife did it. And I was like, it's a logo. And this is what we're going to use because I don't have any other better ideas. And sometimes I feel like, yeah. Was it that way, Matthew, where you just had to be like, well, we need a logo. And I don't really want to, I don't know enough about it.
Honestly, I've forgotten about that timeline. I don't remember anything before Kelsey, BK, before Kelsey.
Oh, nice.
I don't remember that design experience.
Sometimes it's best to forget those little things. Yeah, that's cool, man. Kelsey's like, I have it tattooed on me just as a memento for what's like, going
that's
on.
A reminder.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. You're able to come on and make a pretty impactful, you know, statement with you know, the logo redesign and all that kind of stuff. Had you had any brewing experience before?
No.
Any home brewing?
I still have not brewed a single drop of beer in my life. And people keep asking me, like, oh, you know, are you interested in home brewing? Have you ever home brewed before? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, when I was working in retail, I was like, I'm surrounded by the world's best beers.
Yes.
And now I've got a team of some of the world's best brewers working right behind me. Like, why am I going to brew and drink my own crappy stuff when I can drink world-class beers that are made, you know, by my friends and coworkers?
Yeah, I get that. It's sort of like the reverse of being a home brewer. Like, that's where I am right now. Where it's like, why am I going to home brew my own crappy beer? When I can just go to the store, I mean, my craft brewery is the local store. You just go and you go, okay, I'll grab this one or I'll grab this one. That's my home brewery.
Right.
And, you know, every once in a while, it's fun to dabble. But, you know, I guess coming from a creative side, I mean, you know, we always say homebrewing lets you be creative and it's that creative outlet. But coming from a video production side and a graphic design side, it sounds like you already fulfill that need to sort of, you know, muck about.
Yeah, I do the label design as well for the cans and stuff. So there's definitely ways that I can exercise my creativity, and you know, it's still fun to chat with everybody and come up with new beer ideas and things like that. And but then you know, the technical aspect, I'm just like, here you go, like put some fruit in there, and then we're good.
You guys are doing great. This is all good.
Or please don't put fruit in there.
No fruit and Kolsch.
Yeah, that's a big part too. Matthew, tell me a little bit about the name Exhibit A Brewing. How did that come about?
So originally it was kind of thin air, actually. But as we started to discuss the word exhibit, it started to become clear. Before Exhibit A was created as a name, my partner said, you know, you're always on, you know, it's always a presentation. You're always like fish in a fishbowl. And he came up with the word exhibit, and then we were kind of talking about it and how exhibit didn't really complete what we were trying to say. And then it just kind of happened. It was like, it was said, he said, Exhibit A, what do you think? We could name the real estate company Exhibit B, you know,
right.
Something as silly as that. And I was like, I don't think so. I don't get it. I don't think so. And then we slept on it. And then we were like, actually, this is perfect. Let's start making other decisions besides this one.
Yes.
And we decided very quickly, we knew that people would kind of veer towards this law thing. So we did kind of come up with some beer names that would, you know, kind of tease that a little bit. And
yeah.
None of us are attorneys. We hire attorneys, you know, and I thought it would be kind of an interesting approach. Like, you know, beer names tend to be like, or brewery names tend to be like location based.
Yeah.
You know, flowers or trees or animals. And I don't know, we put that stuff in our beer names, I suppose, but we just thought it'd be fun to tell the story, because the story actually is, it's not that, it's, you know, it's, I don't know how to put it, but it has become Exhibit A. We are the presentation, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, because as soon as I saw you on the sheet, as soon as I saw the beers come in, I was like, okay, well, there has to be some sort of law backstory, but right. I sort of like the fact that there's not. And you took that law aspect of presenting facts. These are the facts to support my case. And I like that you sort of took that and then used that literally.
Yeah.
Like this is my beer.
You and I are both drinking Goody Two Shoes. Like, it just, that term, I thought about innocence, and it just kind of like, I think my wife even might have said, like, Goody Two Shoes. That's kind of like innocence. And I'm like, oh, that could be the Kolsch. Okay.
Yeah.
It was 6 months before I brewed that beer when we thought about the name, you know?
Wow.
And it literally has become, as far as I'm concerned, the soul of our brewery.
Now, when you said that you were trying to find a name that sort of showcased what you were trying to say with your brewery, what are you trying to say? What's your sort of ethos about brewing and starting a brewery, and why did you want to get into this very competitive, market that we have in beer?
I mean, the easy answer is I had no choice. It's the only thing I'm pretty good at.
Okay.
I've been brewing for 23 years professionally. Have worked in brew pubs, regional breweries, started a couple brands. I just kind of refused not to be a brewer. When I had other options, not that my other options were all that amazing, but I did have some options. Tire business was one of them.
Well, and you're one of those, I don't know, man, the roadies, right? Where you never say die. You're in the business because it's in your blood. It's under your skin. Yeah. And you can't help but be a part of that. And I think that's cool.
I can't get out.
It's neat. It's neat. I was going to say old guard, but that's not really what I meant.
You can say that.
No,
Kelsey's 2 years older than me, but whatever. You can say
that. Well, to have 23 years experience, I mean, that's a ton of experience. And to just not stop, to keep going, and that perseverance, I think is a pretty cool story, man. I like hearing that.
Thank you. Thank
yeah.
You. I like feeling it.
Do you though? You're getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning still, man. What's going on?
I don't know. I was doing the same thing at John Harvard's in the 90s, but for whatever reason, it's just how I roll. I like to mash in early.
Okay. You're one of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely annoys the production crew. There's no question. But I'm first in and no one's there till 7:30 tomorrow. So actually Kyle's mashing in with me tomorrow. So
nice.
I've got someone with me,
I can get behind that too. That was what resonates whenever we have brewers come on that talk like you do. We're like, I really like being in there early. There's no one there. I can sort of just crank the music up to 10 and just do my thing. And I appreciate that. And then when it's like, here comes the first shift. I'm going to go. It's fine. You know what I mean? I can dig that for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Kolsch, the Goody Two Shoes. Here's the can. All right. Now, Kelsey, this was you.
And here's the Stanga.
Oh, nice. You got the nice glassware and everything. Look at you.
Yeah.
Official glassware.
Yeah.
Got the shoes on the back. So I didn't draw those exact shoes. So we had some pre-existing artwork for the shoes and the cat when I came on board. So I did more of the can layout for these.
Okay, nice.
So I'm more of a designer than an illustrator.
Okay.
The idea of that can as well as the cat can and Hair Razor, which is our double IPA, is there. It has a front and a back. You know, usually a can just has a front. And
I'm glad you told me that, dude, because I had no idea. Now I'm shocked and excited to show this
really
to everybody.
See it on here.
Yeah,
it's all messed up.
Here's the front.
Yep. Two sides of every story, you know.
Yeah, so it's two sides to every story. So but we want to be able to show the front and the back, and every good story begins with Exhibit A, we like to think.
I like that. I think that's a pretty cool idea. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. I think that's a fairly original label design that I've seen. I've seen a lot of them, but I forget a lot of them too. So that's a cool idea, man. That's very clever. I like it. Matt, tell me a little bit about this beer. You said that this is sort of your the linchpin of your lineup. Is this a recipe that you had and have been carrying around with you, or did one of your brewers make it up, or how did we
think about this? I designed the beer, but you know, we spent a lot of time thinking about ingredients before we brewed beer. And you know, you asked about my shirt before, and I do have a Valley Malt shirt on.
Valley Malt
is a local malt house here in Massachusetts. And Andrew and Chris Stanley are the owners and maltsters, and they have developed some incredible grains that we use. And we've developed some stuff with them as well on the roasted side. But for this beer, we wanted some Vienna. We wanted a very tiny bit of wheat. The warthog wheat we get from New York, from Ochsner Farms, and, you know, German Pilsner. You know, there's nothing more appropriate in this beer than an authentic grain from Germany. And so I like to think of it as our kind of authentic tribute to a place, to a style, to the people there in Cologne. And, you know, it's grainy, it's crystal clear, it drinks crispy, you know, it's dry. There it looks. Yeah, I like how that one looks. The one I'm drinking actually was canned on Friday or on Thursday. It's all equally crystal clear and beautiful.
Nice.
I often say that I feel like this beer is the soul of our brewery. I think that's probably more about when the shift is over, look at the brewers and what are they drinking? And until Right to Farm came out, they were all drinking Kolsch every day. And now, you know, half are drinking Shoes, half have Right to Farm, you know?
Which
and
is,
I think that's, yeah.
What's Right to Farm? What style
that's
is that?
That's the Mexican lager.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Kelsey's drinking.
Yeah, that's a coin flip for me, man. Either one.
Yeah. So for us as brewers, it's like, you know, we're getting hammered with hops constantly. Like, how many more IPAs do we need to drink for a shifty? And a 4 or 5% beer at the end of your shift or two is, I think, the most appropriate way to finish. And for me, this kind of beer is perfect because it's meant for that. It's meant for session. It's meant for, you know, drinking and having that experience with the people that you're surrounded by.
You know, and that's a good segue, Matthew, because, you know, you've been in the industry a long time. And, you know, it's only sort of recently that I think a lot of breweries are re-embracing the Kolsch, like re-embracing lagers and pilsners specifically. Mm-hmm. And I think we, you know, chalk it up to, well, they're brewer's beers, just like you're saying. But brewers have always sort of looked for these beers. You know what I mean? So how do you, what's your take on why we're suddenly now seeing an explosion of Kolsch, an explosion, not in the literal sense, of, you know, cans of lagers and, you know, lighter beers like this hitting the marketplace and sort of resonating with more people than we have seen before?
I mean, you're asking us why people are making these decisions.
Yeah.
I think on some level, I mean, Kelsey can speak on the marketing side of that, but I think for us, like when people come to our brewery, we approach them with, you know, what do you like? But if they're going to lean right towards IPA, then we know what they want. That's easy.
Like, get out of their way.
Here's our 4 IPAs that we have.
Yeah.
But if they're like, well, you know, I like to try a little bit, and then we go right to Kolsch. Okay. And I think that it's about the brewery's desire to teach and guide and help, you know, sort of, you know, yeah, teach the palate a little bit. I think the Kolsch style has taken a beating over the last 20 years.
Yeah, man.
In this market, you know, just in the US, and you know, we don't really know Kolsch as well as we think we do.
No, we don't. Yeah, and with this, like I said, I don't know, renaissance or whatever you want to call it, what fancy word you want to put on it, but Kolsch now is not like Kolsch in like the early 2000s, you know, where it was sort of watery, where Kolsch, well, that's a thin beer with really no flavor, maybe a little bit of hops, but not really. And then maybe some esters, but also then not really. Here's this, you know, thing. And getting to your Kolsch, which is night and day difference, because like you're saying, it is grainy. There is some oomph to it. There is flavor. This is a complete round aspect of what a Kolsch style is, at least the Kolsch that I like to drink. I've never been to Cologne, so I have no idea what it's like right there at the source. You know what I mean? But these are the types of Kolsch that I like to drink. Because there is that grainy.
I like to think about, like, I brewed some of those, you know, let's just call them average American golden ales that we called Kolsch in 2001 or 2 or 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I think brewers did a little bit of a disservice. We weren't maybe doing it in an authentic way. Mm-hmm. Trying to bang out some crystal clear golden ale real quick.
I forgive you. Easy. It's fine. I forgive you. You're absolved of your
sin. I mean, I was making 3-week Kolsch beer at John Harvard's in the 90s. So that I know. But like now we spend 5 to 7 weeks making this beer. And
oh, bless you.
It's, you know, it's appropriate for the style. It's better to do it this way, you know?
Is it, I apologize. I seem to be like just picking on your past, but how was that sort of transition? You see what I mean? Because it feels like not even just a pivot as far as, oh, just process is, but I would imagine some sort of mental capacity of like, well, I can't think of a Kolsch as this anymore. It has to be elevated. It has to be, I have to move and change my aspect on how I approach this style because that's what I like.
Yeah.
Is that
I
tough
read
to
every
do?
Book I could. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I read about it. I have not been to Cologne as a proper adult. Mm-hmm. I went in the '80s as a high school student, and I did drink Kolsch.
There you go. Attaboy.
But I need to go back. In fact, luckily my nephew is living in Frankfurt now.
Oh no.
Taught himself German during COVID and now is going to getting his graduate degree in Germany. And, wow. Yeah, he's far more brilliant than all of us. But he, so he's like, when are you coming? Cause we're going to Bamberg. We're going everywhere. So
oh, dude,
that's in 2022. I got
Uncle Traveling Matt. There you go.
Yes.
Get a Fraggles reference in for somehow.
And we're coming with his father. So it's going to be interesting.
Oh man.
It'll be great.
That
It'll
sounds
great.
Like a good time, dude. Yeah.
But I think that it's reading up on the style and understanding culture, I think is important in this particular beer. Being that it's an appellation, you know, and also, you know, just trying every single Kolsch we can. I mean, if there's a Kolsch at a brewery, I'm drinking that beer. I don't quite frankly care about all their other beers as much as I care about that one.
100% same.
Yeah.
I mean, not specifically, but definitely Kolsch, any lager, any type of lager under 6%, I'm going to drink it. But I guess what's fascinating to me is that the shift and, you know, I'm trying to belabor the point too much, but just the change over the years in your own professional brewing of changing how the Kolsch is made and kind of, you know, making it sounds like it's like your, you know, if every superhero has a logo, like Kolsch would be your logo, it sounds like.
Yes, I am Kolschman.
yeah. Watch me brew at 4:30 in the morning for 7 weeks.
On my Instagram this morning.
And I think to the point of this kind of paradigm shift that we're seeing, I think it's the beer drinker, you know, like when they first start getting into craft beer, they're just like, oh my God, flavor. You know, it's like you grow up drinking, you know, Bud Light, you know, or, at best. And, so you discover craft beer and you're like, oh my God, flavor. And it's hops or it's, you know, pastry stouts or whatever it is. And then you kind of start exploring what else is out there and you start to come to, I think, appreciate, the history of where the beers came from and classic styles and gaining a more developed palate in that sense. So I think what we're seeing is the craft beer market take that shift a little bit to going back to, you know, really well-produced lagers and really well-produced beers like Kolsch and some Saisons and things like that.
Yeah, it feels like the sensationalism has sort of been sucked out a little bit and sort of more authenticity has sort of been injected in. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that.
Well, but there's like the race to the extreme and then there's the other side.
Yeah, that pendulum, hopefully it just... Someone puts a magnet in the middle. That's where I want. I want to be in the middle. moderate in beer. This is a great Kolsch. I really like this. There's a little bit of honey coming through now. It's warming up a little bit. But you still get that very nice grain aromatic. Almost like you're mashing it. Like I could walk into the brewery now and know that you're brewing this beer. I feel like from the aroma. That's excellent Kolsch.
Come over on Thursday.
I'll be right there, man. Yeah, I like it. That's very good. Good job on that.
We are super proud of it. It's also the funny thing about that beer is it's received the most accolades, industry accolades.
Oh.
But if you look at Untappd and you look at like our IPAs, it's like not even close. It's pretty funny.
Is this IPAs do better on Untappd?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, easy. I feel like that's a beer name.
I don't mean the style's easy. I just mean that it's easy to give a 4 to an IPA.
Yes, right.
And if you're not as educated and you're rating beers and you drink a Kolsch that isn't something that you typically understand or drink,
right?
Then I understand why you gave it a 3.
I'm sort of mad about it.
I'm sort of mad about it, but I understand.
and those are the things that I love to hate about that site because it's inundated with. This isn't my particular style. I don't like this style. 2 out of 5.
I hate it.
But you just want
the
check in.
Yeah.
Are you guys Untappd people as far as, you know, following intently on who's saying what about your brewery and your beers?
I mean, Kelsey,
I try to keep him off of it.
Okay. Okay. You're the shield.
I'm like, Matthew, stop looking at Untappd.
And more importantly, stop commenting to people about you. I have made a lot of friends that way and a couple of enemies where, you know, like, I'm like, I get it. You didn't like this, but could you at least give me like the date of the can? Like, what was the reason why it was so terrible? And if the answer is, I don't like the style and you gave it a one or two or whatever, what I can't fight that. That's a fight I don't have any interest in.
My favorite response was somebody replied, we said, you know, why the bad review? You know, was it a bad can or whatever? And their response was, I don't like IPA, so I'm going to keep rating them low so brewers stop making them.
Okay.
Okay.
God,
I can't argue with that.
You found my Untappd burner account. Yeah. That was me. And that's,
one
I think,
person crusade.
That's, I think, the problem with, you know, sort of social media in general, but specifically rating things, because the person on the other side thinks that they're making an impact, because that's sort of how it's marketed to you. You know what I mean? Communicate with the water. But in actuality, it's like, you're not going to, you know, hold on, you guys, you know, Ted's Bigfoot, you know, 69-420 on Untappd doesn't like IPAs. Hold on. Let's stop making them.
Right.
It's going to be a thing. That's wild to me.
I do think that it can be constructive. And I like the typed out ratings. Like, if you're going to give me a proper review and spend some effort and tell me about what you tasted and it was off or on or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'm into it, whether you liked it or not.
Okay.
I think the just number rating is part of, I think, one of the issues with that. I used to love reading Beer Advocate reviews of our beers or my beers over the years.
Yeah.
And I have made friends through that, actually, oddly.
Wow, really?
Even like rescued some people from hating me, you know, like,
no,
this,
shit.
Like, this brewer should not make beer.
No,
it clearly knows nothing. And then I'm like on that. I'm like, really? So these are my accolades. Like, why do you hate me so much and my beer? And those people end up maybe even liking you and might support the brewery.
Wow. And now Kelsey works for you. So that's, I think,
right.
That's a good turnaround. Yeah, it is nice to turn around a critic, man. I had one who emailed me the other day calling me the C word.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay. And, you know, you just engage with, like, you know, some sort of, you know, restraint and everything's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what are you going to do? I'm not going to change his mind, but maybe I did. Who knows?
See it as an opportunity to, you know, make a customer for life. You know, if you have a chance to turn that person around and, you know, invite them for a beer, you know, and let's drink something together. And,
You know, and that's the hard part about, you know, having that happen when you run a podcast versus, you know, a brewery.
Right.
You can't
invite them on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, and you sort of have to, you know, they expect a certain like, interaction level. You know, and it's like, well, not everybody's the same on the radio as they are in real life. And so anyway, it's a weird thing. But yeah, customer service is hard. I was actually chatting with a lady who works at a brewery today about how customer service for breweries can be particularly hard, because you have interactions like this where people clearly have been consuming and then they want to tell you about it at that moment where they're, you know, inebriated enough to, you know, be vocal. And that's hard. That's got to be tough.
Like, people drink and have opinions.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Yeah. Those two things mix really well, too.
Mm-hmm.
I did just crack open Right to Farm, the Mexican-style lager, which I love this style so much, and I'm very excited to drink this. And it says, brewed with locally grown corn, barley, and wheat, malted by Valley Malt in, what is it, Hadley.
Hadley.
Mass. Okay. Yep. So do me a favor. Tell me a little bit about Valley Malt and why Valley Malt?
So, oh my God. I mean, why not Valley
I know.
Malt?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I was there.
Smelling
was
that Kolsch, I could agree with you.
I hiked a mountain and swam in their pool yesterday. They happen to be good friends of mine.
Wow, okay, nice.
They're also my favorite supplier. Don't tell my BSG rep that. But, they are. I mean, they will literally find grain for us to use that aren't typical. I mean, actually, Andrea posted tonight that she's got triticale if we want some. But
what is that?
So my whole point, the whole reason we even brewed this beer was because we wanted a brewer besides me to come up with a beer to brew, write the recipe, come up with the concept, the whole thing.
Yeah.
John Latuca, one of our brewers, who's now our lead brewer, came up with a recipe. He said to me, can we get corn? You know, he was looking in the catalog online of one of our larger suppliers. And I said, yeah, we can get corn from Valley Malt. We don't need corn from, you know, whatever, commodity corn. So we actually have a pretty specific farm that we bought it from. It's one field, in New York. And, so we used, I think it was probably 30% corn or something like that. Yeah. So there's like some amber corn, not crystal malt, but you know, like a red malt,
okay,
obviously corn, and then just, kind of pale corn, Pilsner colored corn, if you will.
Okay.
And of course, a bunch of Valley Malt Pilsner as well. And, some other various grains. We use a kind of Cara dextrin malt from them as well. We call Va Va Vom. So it's mostly Valley Malt. I mean, I think it's 95% or something, and, or maybe all, I forget, but, the interesting part for us is that it's about supply chain. So there's moments actually where we can't get grain right now from Europe. You know, getting grain from Europe takes 14 weeks.
Wow. So
if I order a container of Golden Promise from Simpsons, it's 14 weeks. Now I can buy it from the warehouse, but you know, it takes time, and sometimes availability is at risk. And we find that having this local supplier, you know, we happen to be a really good customer there, so they put us on a priority for sure. But
absolutely.
So we can always get their grain. You know, it's like amazing that it's available all the time, and it's, you know, they're basically brewing or malting everything to order for us. So we have a standing purchase order that's constantly in the system trying to get more grain. And it's been an amazing relationship, actually.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds cool. Is there crystal malt in here?
No. We actually don't have any crystal malt in our entire brewery, to tell you the truth.
Really?
The amber corn is kind of stewed as like a crystal malt would be.
Yeah, and that's where I'm going with that. Like, that's what I'm focusing on, because you're getting some of those crystal malt, like lighter crystal malt flavors. Like, I don't know if I would go raisiny, but maybe a little bit of raisiny.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's coming from that amber corn.
Could be. Yeah, yeah. It would make sense.
I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah. I mean, from a standpoint of here's everything you know about brewing beer, and then here's this one, like, you know, integer or whatever that comes in and is like, hey, guess what? You've just learned something new, and now I have to absorb that into my knowledge.
So the corn, it's interesting because corn husk doesn't bring color like barley husk at all. And in fact, we believe that the color of this is actually more from the longer boil and the use of this dextrin malt with corn. Now, the corn that was amber and the corn that was not roast, not no Maillard reaction was given to it, if you will. So it's like Pilsner color.
Yeah.
Actually, in a steep test, deliver almost the same color.
Oh, wow.
The flavors are different. The flavors are more bready from the amber and almost little like sweeter.
Yeah.
But not much, not like maybe a tint darker, literally not at all much darker. So that kind of sensory that we did with Andrea on the corn showed us that like, oh, we could use this and get some character without so much color. Whereas if we put an amber barley into this beer, it would be red. I mean, the beer would look like, you know, like an Auburn.
Yeah.
Deep copper beer. I mean, we love it.
That's wild, man.
We keep wanting to make more of it.
How do people like it over in the tap room and you know,
it does
distribution?
Great.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, it does really well.
Yeah, it's a number two seller sometimes, sometimes just edging out Kolsch in the beer garden. Casamiao, our IPA, is number one, but
always
of course. Those Untappd kids, they gotta have something to click on. I mean, I could definitely see that, but you know, when you want something with a little bit more of a sort of a darker mouthfeel, which I know don't make sense, but in beer that sort of makes sense. I could definitely see reaching for this. Absolutely. And it doesn't taste like a traditional quote unquote Mexican style lager. And I'm assuming it's because of the corn addition. I mean, 30% corn is a lot.
Yeah. And deliberate. I mean, we wanted to really have an impact from the corn. You know, it's like we don't use ingredients to just mess around. We want them to highlight. We want to highlight them, especially when it's on the malt side. I mean, hops, it's easy to do. You know, dry hop it with Galaxy, and now it's got a Galaxy thing on it. Call it Galaxy dry hopped, whatever.
Right.
And that's exciting to people. But if you tell people it's like, you know, malted amber maize, you know, like people are less, it's not as sexy as hops for whatever reason. We don't know what happened with malt and its marketing team, but
I lost the sexy.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, it's all about, you know, fan levels, and you know, it's like that's really, it's not as cool alpha acid.
It's like the offensive power line in football doesn't get as much attention as the quarterback, even though they're just as important.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but they're the backbone. They're the backbone of the team. Malt's the backbone of the beer.
It really is.
Yeah, I would love a Mexican style lager beer festival. You know, they have IPA festivals and barley wine festivals and. But I know now, like, recently, within the last 10 years, I feel like I hear more about, like, Pilsner-focused beer festivals.
Yeah, there's a lot of lager events.
I'm ready for it.
That have come across. Yeah. I mean, Oxbow does a great one up in Maine, Pils and Love, right?
Yeah. And so, I was going to say, it's called Oktoberfest.
Right. Oktoberfest is a decent one. Yeah.
Well, that's
been around for a few years.
That's true. Yeah.
Tiny one.
The best time I ever had, well, not ever had, but you know, it sounds cool. The best time I ever had was we went to, I believe it was Denver, and I want to say it was for Homebrew Con. I forget what it was. It was some event. And we just rolled into like a random bar, and they were having like a mini Pilsner Fest. And so every beer was a lager, and it was like, oh my, this exists. This is a thing. And this was like 5-8 years ago. I never forgot it. I think about it from time to time. It sticks in my head because out here in San Francisco Bay Area, it's IPAs as far as you can see. And it's frustrating sometimes to go out. Because you're like, I mean, especially.
Don't you have now, what's the brewery that KDB used to work at? One of our brewers. Oh, Trumer.
Trumer, yeah.
Yeah, good lager.
Yes. Trumer is great pills. Justin, our other host, loves Trumer pills. For me, the ester, it's very. I haven't had one in like 10 years, so I should revisit it. But it seemed very fruity, estery, and that I couldn't hang with at the time.
Yeah,
it was just different for me, but. Much respect for Trumer. They do a great job, and they are the go-to sort of lager out here. If you're not drinking Anchor Steam, which you know, whatever,
hybrid,
as far as on the lager scale of things.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, this is good. I like this. Is a very good take on a Mexican style lager, man. I think it's great. That corn addition is very good because it is light. The body's light as much as it can be, but there is still some body there and some of those darker crystal malt-esque flavors.
It's kind of like cooking, you know? It's like your dish is only going to be as good as your ingredients. So if you're using really good, high-quality ingredients, your end product's going to be that much better.
Yeah, and that's that Valley Malt. That's what you guys are after.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How long have you been hooking up with them? Since the beginning?
It's interesting. I met Andrea and Chris about 10 years ago or 12 years ago when they first were starting. They had a little 20-pound malt system in their basement. And I was in between breweries, and maybe it was 10 years ago. And they, I saw some posts that they were going to the beer fest, and I emailed them and was like, hey, you know, I live nearby you. We haven't met, but I'd love to meet you guys and talk about grain. I'm heading to the fest. And Andrea was like, why don't we drive together? So they picked me up and drove me to the fest, and we hung out the whole day and got to know each other. And then they slowly started growing, and I was working for another brewery at the time, and I started using their ingredients. And in those days, they were inconsistent, and they were challenged with tons of you know, trying to make the best malt they could out of the grain they had, which wasn't always great grain. So,
okay, right.
So their job then was to find farms that would grow malt quality, barley, wheat, rye, you know, everything.
Wow.
And that was, I think, one of the hardest parts. And we've actually formed a group called the Northeast Grain Shed Alliance that is at, that is the 400-mile circle of farms, bakers, maltsters, brewers, distillers that are all in it together to support the local supply chain of grain.
That's rad, man.
Yeah. And they are about to grow like crazy because they're about building right now a new malt house in Holyoke, where they're going to really increase their capacity, and they're going to, they're building a grain hub that will store and process and deal with logistics for farmers for all their grain. Yeah.
That's wild to me. That's, I mean, first of all, that's crazy growth, and that's really great because, you know, everyone needs access to custom malt, especially when it's local. I think that's cool. You guys are really supporting the local economy chain and all that kind of good stuff. But it's even weirder that they didn't even know you and they just wanted to ride you at the beer fest. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Because I've met a lot of weird asses at beer fest that I would never let anywhere near my car.
Right. Well, they kind of, they figured I wasn't, I was harmless. I was a brewer.
Yeah.
And
then, well,
and Andrea has, a
that's
funny
who I was talking
about. Yeah. Andrea has a funny story about that night because apparently when I got in the car, there was no question whether I had been smoking a little bit of weed or not. So she immediately liked me. And apparently I stank good, but
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. We just became close friends right away, you know, and I think, you know, we shared a sensibility about wanting to do something different and better with beer making, like local beer is only as local as what you're, that is in it. And maybe, you know, you've got water, you've got labor, you've got local artists making your labels like Kelsey is, but what about the ingredients? You know, and the greatest hops are grown in Europe and in the Northwest. So we don't really have that, although we do have some hop farms around here growing amazing hops as well. But fewer and further between than grain farmers, you know?
Okay.
So we had a lot of access, I guess, you know?
And that is a good point. I mean, you want to try to be as local as possible. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's a lot of breweries that are looking at this as a really important part of their business plans. I mean,
yeah.
Allagash has pledged to use 1 million pounds of Maine grown grains. I mean,
wow,
that's insane. And it, you know, and they're doing that. They're not messing around. They're, they're successfully executing that goal. I thought that we would be, I figured 50,000 pounds of locally sourced grain in our beers would be like an amazing accomplishment. In 2022, we'll do 100,000. So,
wow.
Feels pretty good.
Yeah. Congrats on that. That's awesome. I mean, yeah, that's really great.
I always wonder how the trajectory may have been different if like Matthew had walked out of the house with a pretzel necklace on, you know, and you know, it's like a beer depository system, you know, right. Like,
untapped, open and ready to go. Yeah.
I would have never made it to Boston.
All right, guys, hang on just a second. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to crack open some more beers and we're going to continue talking. You guys ready for that?
Yeah. I'm going to do a quick close change.
Do it.
Is that all right?
Sure, man. Yeah, do whatever you want. All right, everybody, hang on just a second. It's Exhibit A Brewing Company. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into The Session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
Hey, all right, everybody. Thanks for hanging around. We are back with Exhibit A Brewing in Massachusetts, and we have Kelsey and Matthew on the line. Welcome back, guys. Thanks for hanging on. Not like you can go anywhere. I mean, you know, I've hacked your computer. What are the next beers I should open? Are the next beer singular?
I know. Kelsey's drinking a short cell, I think.
Yeah, I didn't send one of these though. This had just come out. I think when I shipped the beers, but this is short cell. This is a session, like an American IPA. It's kind of like the little brother to Market Gap that I sent over.
Okay,
so you should have that one.
Well, I don't like that you've left out a tasty sounding beer. So that's one cap out of five for you. So I have Market Gap. I have the Cat's Meow. I have Briefcase Porter. And then I have a Hair Razor.
Probably I would say either Market Gap or Cat. Unless you want to continue to talk about malt, then we can go straight to the porter.
Go to porter.
I love a porter, so let's continue talking about malt, and we'll hit some porter action. What do you think of that?
I love it.
All right, tell me about Briefcase Porter here.
Well, all the roasted grains in that beer come from Valley Malt, because that makes sense to us.
Surprise.
Yeah, so they developed grains for us, with us, for this beer. I mean, we have chocolate wheat. We have a brown malt. We have a chocolate malt, flaked barley, and va-va-vom.
So when you say, look at that color.
Oh, God beautiful.
Bless. When you say you developed grain with them.
Malt, I should say.
Well, malt.
We talked about what I wanted, what I would use from, say, the available larger malt houses like Weyermann or Simpson's or Crisp or any of the other European ones.
Yeah.
For American malt houses, I would go with Brees or Rar or another malt house that does roasted grains. And originally I thought, well, I ordered some from the UK and they came and they looked nice. And I'm like, oh, these are a year old. Wow. That's not great. But year old grain is not uncommon. I mean, it only harvests once a year, right?
Yeah, so that's true.
So, but roasted grains, really, I felt that they should be fresher. And I talked to Andrea and they bought a roaster and started roasting grain. Like, it was literally that simple. I mean, they were looking to get into the specialty line.
Okay.
The first roaster was like a little 10 pounder. And then the second roaster was like, a bigger 10 pounder, a better, more efficient 10 pounder.
Okay.
I think they do each turn. It's like a coffee roaster now that they use. That's like, digital, programmable, awesome. And then, but it's still done by hand. And it's, Margot, who's their maltster, she's roasting all this grain and we buy a ton of it, especially nice. This time of year.
Yeah.
And we have all, I saw her on was it Saturday or Friday? I don't know what day it was. And she was like, I'll get those other POs out to you, And I'm like, no, I don't want to put pressure on you. I'm like, now seeing the amount of work that she's doing for these roasted grains. And I'm like, oh my God, she had been roasting for like 8 hours at that point. Like, it was crazy.
God.
And she's a warrior. She's amazing. So,
She's
our malt. She's our maltster, but she's also the logistics person there that handles all the orders and deals with it, figures out the schedule. But with Porter, it made perfect sense to lean very heavily on Valley Malt and to find the grain. Like, we built the beer around the grains we wanted to use, right? So it just made sense, and I love that beer enough to put my name on the label, which was. Something that we did.
You mean like your brand, or what do you mean? What's
like literally it says on the side.
Oh yeah. Just another delicious porter with Matthew Steinberg. Wow, look at you.
I had some history with porter here in Massachusetts, so at the time it kind of made sense for us to give a little nod to the other porters that I had brewed by saying that.
Yeah, are you
I think it came from a social media comment, wasn't it? It was like the first time we were brewing, Matthew was brewing porter at the brewery. And he made a comment about like how great it smells. And like, it's like such a great smell when you're brewing porter. And one of his friends commented, oh, great. Just another delicious porter by Matthew Steinberg.
That might've been, that might've been either Jared or one of those guys, the Beer Advocate crew that didn't like me so much at first and then got to like,
there you go. What's your history with porter? What do you mean? You've just been brewing it a lot, or
I mean, porter was the first style of beer I made as a home brewer, and that was in I'm going to just say mid '90s. It feels better to say mid '90s than early '90s.
There you go.
I worked for a brewery called Mayflower Brewing Company several years later, and that beer got gold medal at GBB, Great British Beer Festival. It did very well at GABF.
Nice.
We got some really cool accolades for that beer. And that is the one beer that people still come to me. Now, mind you, I opened that brewery with Drew in, 2008. And people still talk about that beer to me all the time.
Really?
All the time. And they still brew it. It still stands up. And sometimes they, you know, people want to say, oh, I like Briefcase, but like Mayflower, you know, they still hold Mayflower in a certain place.
Sure.
And I kind of love that. Like, yeah. I'm fine with it. I, you know, just drink porter, please. You know? I think just as a style, if you were to ask me like my favorite style of beer, I would say porter, but it would be more about the brewing of it than the drinking of it, just because it smells so good when you're making that beer.
100% agree.
Yeah. And if you drink our porter, which you're doing,
yeah,
you can like you did with the Kolsch too, you can taste the mash, if you will.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you can taste the grain. Like, it is very clear what's happening in that beer.
For me, the aromatics are definitely mash related. And sometimes I'll, you know, say that is like a, well, maybe it's under attenuated or there's like a sweetness to the, well, I guess differentiating between like smelling like mash and being wordy.
Right.
And I don't mean the latter. I mean the former. Dry. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Definitely dry. But it does smell like the grain bill. It smells like you're mashing in.
Yeah.
And to me, that is sort of a hard essence to capture. You have so much blow off and you have so much of this and so much of that. But if you have quality malt, which obviously you do, I think those aspects and those characteristics tend to translate a little bit more.
We like to think that Valley Malt has their own terroir, which they absolutely do. And I think that what you're talking about is that, like, you're, you know, and you can get that from other malts. I mean, there's no question that when you brew with Weyermann, like you taste in our Kolsch beer, it's, you know, kind of a very different aspect of what you're getting from malt, but, you know, similar kind of approach.
Yeah.
Like Simpson's Maris Otter or Golden Promise, you know, it's a very unique characteristic.
Gorgeous malt. I love it.
Yeah. You know what? First of all, I agree with you on porter. That is, that's one of the more underrepresented styles. And I was excited when I saw this in the box come through. Because I haven't had like a real porter in a long ass time. As much as
Anchor Porter, you got Anchor Porter right down the street.
You know what? That is hard to find when it's out.
Weird.
And I know, right? It's so bizarre. And it's like, you know, they just went through that rebrand. And so you get a lot of the Anchor Steam in cans, which is cool. But even then, it's hard. We're out. I mean, I'm out here in what's called East County. I'm like an hour and a half away from the city. And it's like, we're probably 8 years behind the trend in East County because it's just, it's tons of IPAs and fruited sours, and which seems counter to my point, but then it's hard to get stuff like Anchor Steam out here. It's
hard to get the traditional, right? The standards, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's fucking impossible.
When I was in college in Flagstaff, we were getting kegs, 50 liters of Anchor, Sierra, whatever.
Oh man.
$79 a 50 liter of Anchor Porter. I think Anchor Stout or Sierra Stout was $89. It was like a little more, you know? But I do love the style. I mean, I drink dark beer year round, you know?
Yeah. And that was my other question is how seasonal is a dark beer like this for you guys? Because I don't know what your temp is out there, but out here it's been 100 for like 5 days. And I don't think much people are making
take that one. Cause you got your fingertips on that.
And we definitely see a Briefcase Porter. We do brew year round. We do see a little bit of a drop off in sales, but you know, during like the hotter months. But we've got our crew that, you know, our regulars that just drink porter year round. And
bless them.
There's people who just like dark beer, and you know, if you don't have nothing to offer them, then they have nothing to drink. So I think having something like porter, especially on a hot day, it's only 5.4%, so it drinks light. You know, it's not a heavy mouthfeel. It finishes dry, so it's not cloying like a 10% stout could be. So it's actually a nice, fairly refreshing porter. I always like to one of my greatest porter stories with this is that we have a teaching farm in Framingham called Eastleigh Farm, and they hold events there. And their event coordinator asked me if we wanted to pour beer for a Civil War reenactment they do there every year. And I'm like, heck yeah. It's like, I want to pour beer for a Civil War reenactment.
Yeah, dude.
Sure enough, like after that, like all the soldier, you know, the reenactors are done, they all come charging over to the beer tent. And I brought Briefcase Porter and I brought, I brought Good Cat's Meow, the IPA. And every single one of these reenactors were coming up with their tin cups, you know, to the tent and saying, Porter, please, Porter, 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 Porter. And it was just like 100% summer. Porter. I think I poured one Cat's Meow. Yeah, this was in the middle of the summer.
God.
Yeah, so they're all like in their wool outfits.
Yeah, you know? Right. Just what every like brewery rep wants to see is, oh, your tin cup. Yes. Good representation of the product. That's going to be awesome. Thank you for this. This is going to be great. Yeah.
They're in wool. And they loved it.
Yeah, we have some regulars that literally it's all they drink. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's wild to me. Like, yeah, I love a porter, but, you know, I guess you have enough offerings, enough differences where it sounds like you have enough of a customer base to have this on and then have other things that people can kind of jump back and forth, which is good. And you make a good point, Kelsey. If people like this style and they want it and you don't have it, they can't get it from you.
Right.
You know, you're leaving money on the table, so to speak, which is a weird way to say it. But it's, I mean, it's true. You gotta cater. And I think it's cool and representative of your customer base that there's enough of them to warrant you guys making this beer.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's neat. I wish that we had more of that out here, but everyone wants to chase the IPA. So, yeah, this is a good beer. And you know what? I'll be completely honest. I cracked it. I drank it. The first sip, I was like, it's sort of more like a stout. It's roasty as hell. And like very, the dark grains are very, very present. But the more I drink it, everything sort of mellows in my mouth. And I don't know if I was just maybe, you know, had some Right to Farm still in my palate or whatever, but I got used to that.
It is a striking change.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I got used to it. And now I can see the porter and it's almost like the first layer was the roast character. And then that sort of gets absorbed by the palate. I don't know why I get these weird analogies. And like, everything just sort of blossoms through that, and it changes in my mouth, is I guess what I'm saying. After the first two or three sips, it's drinking like a different beer, and it's a little more aggressive of an American porter than I like to brew, but it's fucking delicious. The grain choices are great. There's the sweetness to it. It does finish dry, like you said. It's like that dry bitter chocolate notes in there. The roast character dropped off after a couple of minutes, but it's like, you know, when you get like high cacao percentage chocolate and it's almost like tanniny or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not that level, but it's similar. And it's a similar concept. And yeah, it really is. And I'm curious
what date you have.
I'm sort of trying to wrap my head around it.
And I'm only curious because, you know, us brewers, we sometimes make changes here and there.
Fuck, I can't see because I have this cool little cave. I've designed my lighting to be a gamer lighting system, and I can't figure it out. Let me see if I can
Doesn't
look
matter.
Up.
It's probably, my guess is it's April or May.
I'm going to look now. Now you got me looking, dude.
We like a little time. I like this beer with a little time.
6:08.
Yeah, it's okay. So that's fresh, actually, for this beer.
Is it really?
We come this time of year, it's all fresh, but towards the middle and end of the summer, sometimes we would be drinking 3 and 4 month old, porter. We give this 180 days, pull date, meaning we give it 6 months.
Okay.
And actually I've had plenty of cans much older than that of this beer that have been outstanding.
I can see that with the flavors that I'm getting.
Just is so stable and
yes,
yeah,
yeah. The roast mellows out a little bit and
yes,
and it becomes almost a little more creamy.
And this is the highest compliment I can pay anybody making dark beers is it smells and tastes like visiting the Rogue Brewery in Newport when they're brewing a dark beer.
I've been to that brewery. I don't know what they were brewing when I was there, but the place is amazing.
I love that was like my first craft beer. So it's like my pedestal beer.
Yeah.
And it just, I drank it again. It's fucking hot and it's like 80, 85 in my studio. So it's roasty. It's roasty in and of itself. So it's warming up pretty good, but that taste with that aromatic brought me back to walking into the brewery on brew day, which is cool. So thank you for that. But yeah, this is a very good porter. It is very complex in a good way. This is like a re-education of a porter drinker.
Nice.
I like it. It's very good. And I was complaining to myself during the break. I was like, this is the problem doing these shows by myself is I have all these beers and I want to drink them all. But I can't. I can't because I got another half an hour to talk and like pretend that I know what I'm talking about. So it's annoying. But yeah, that's a good porter, man. Wow.
We're actually brewing it this week. Brewing it Wednesday.
I like it. What yeast are you using? Do you have a house yeast or do you sort of float between yeast depending on style?
We have a few yeasts. All of these beers, actually all of these beers that you've had so far have had different yeasts. of course, lager yeast for any of our lagers is, we mix it up. We've used a few different lager yeasts. That particular one is, I believe, the Weinstephaner, which is at 3470 German lager yeast. And then...
Okay.
The Kolsch yeast we get from Omega yeast.
Okay.
And we use their, what they call Kolsch 2, which I believe are 0044 or some number. It's their less flocculent, more traditional, 029 basically is the original number for Kolsch yeast. But it's a traditional classic Kolsch yeast. And then for all of our house beers, we use an English strain that we believe delivers, a good balanced ester without being overly fruity. And it allows us to make bright beer. It allows us to make hazy beer. It's pretty versatile. And it's taken us this whole way. And I love the yeast. It works for us. And we've managed to make it work.
Do you find it hard to manage a yeast bank like that? Like different styles and stuff like that?
Yep.
How do you overcome that? Yeah. How do you figure that out without cross contamination? Really?
Well, yeah, cross contamination is less of a concern. It's more just like managing the harvest and checking viability. And we have this guy, Andrew Gill, who's our kind of yeast wrangler these days. And he harvests and does viability tests. And he gives us the amount of weight of yeast that we need for a particular brew based on volume of the wort, the gravity of the wort, the amount of cells that he's going to be giving us. And we have a small lab that he does this work in. And basically Monday and some Tuesdays, he's in there basically most of the day. Wow. And like this morning he was in the end and from the office.
Counting cells. Clicking.
That's cool.
He's got a great brain for it. He's a real brilliant kind of diligent, studious type of guy.
Yeah.
Very intelligent. And so he's got a great brain for this kind of work. So he found his way. He worked in our tap room. We liked him. He showed interest in beer. He showed interest in brewing. And now he's a brewer, you know, and
I love
and
it.
And yeast wrangler.
That's cool, man. I like that. I like that. That's a good job too. You're almost like placing an order with it. He's like just a supplier now.
Yeah, now like, he's just the person that we rely on to tell us if our yeast is going to work.
Yeah, here's what I'm giving you, and you can't say anything about it because this is what I tell you to do.
Yeah,
and no pressure, you know.
No pressure at all, man. But we're going to have a riot if you don't have porter and Kolsch. What's going on?
It is hard when there's three different yeasts in a week. That part can be challenging.
But we
mix it up. We keep it rolling.
Yeah, well, you don't mix it up, it sounds like.
Try not keep to it mix clean. Up the yeast.
Have you ever had like a cross contamination issue? I mean, you know, where you're like, oh, this tastes like the Kolsch yeast in the porter. What's going on?
No, we've had batches that we've dumped for sure because they weren't right. And we've also had batches that weren't right that we were like, oh, this is pretty good though. So let's do something else with it.
Yeah.
You know, and that happens. Like,
Kelsey, come up with a label quick.
Yeah, we need a label in 3 days.
You're like, damn, dude.
We need a name, we need a label. We need a FTC code.
And we need
TTB approval.
To Kelsey's credit, he has executed on that pressure on several occasions.
Attaboy.
Not so much these days. Like, he kind of you know, lassoed us in a little bit and was like, look, guys, I need 5 weeks. I can't get you a label tomorrow anymore. It doesn't work that way. And we've gotten better at planning and executing so that that doesn't happen to our poor creative department. But but we have had beers that we've been like, this is really cool. Let's do something with it. And we got to come up with a name and we got to make sure that it's, you know, that we're going to serve it and it's going to be something we're proud of, you know? And if we're not going to be proud of it, it's going down the drain, no matter what it is, no matter what it costs, you know?
I love it.
Yeah. We dump batches of Hair Raiser and that is a very expensive beer to make. but we've also rescued a few that weren't, you know, maybe perfect right away. And then we were like, oh, you know what? This is good though. This is fine. This is on brand or whatever.
Let's crack another one. 'Cause I do want to talk about what makes you dump a beer and then how do you rescue a beer? Those are two very interesting points that I really like to talk about. What should I open next? Cat's Meow, Market Gap. I'm imagining Market Gap. Well, I move to the IPA territory.
And then Hair Raisers are double.
It's IPA from here on out.
So.
Right.
Yeah. So that's like closer to 7%. 6.7. Yeah.
The Market Gap?
Yep. And Market Gap, we decided to make, we started to kind of itch for some new hop varieties. And if you look at that, I believe that is Idaho 7, Nelson, and what's the other one?
Sabro, yeah. Sabro. Yeah. Idaho 7, Amarillo, Sabro.
Right, Amarillo, Sabro. Amarillo. Right.
Yeah.
Can't keep them track. Ugh. But yeah, we these are three hops that we don't use in any of our core beers or any of our other beers that we've brewed over the years, besides maybe some Amarillo here and there. We decided to come up with a whole new kind of concept. Market Gap and Short Sell kind of go together, like Kelsey was saying. And these are all, again, very high percentage of locally grown grains. So there's pale malts and probably some wheat, some Vava. I forget what else is in there, but if I remembered it all, I'd be in trouble.
What I liked about this beer was and kind of where the name came from is, you know, you have your West Coast style IPAs and you have your New England style IPAs. What's in the middle? You know, where do those two kind of, you know, where does the Venn diagram kind of cross between those two styles?
Porter.
And what I like about this beer is that it has it has that initial kind of juiciness that you'd get from a New England style IPA, but then also has enough bitterness to kind of, you know, hold its own, and it's also not hazy. It's fairly clear, fairly bright, and I think it just kind of really creates that nice balance and kind of fits that niche between the West Coast and the New England style IPA.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm not, you know, the biggest. Everyone listening is going to be bored of shit by this, but I'm not the biggest IPA guy, but I can differentiate the styles. And I think you're right on that, where it is in the middle, because there is a firm enough bitterness to sort of like scoop up the juiciness and the cloudiness. I think cloud burst, I think, in Santa Cruz or something. They cloudy instead of, anyway.
Yeah, there's cloud everything. We have cloud candy out here.
But like, you know what I mean? It's not just like that overwhelming, like, oh, here's the juicy, you know, thing that the kids are going for. The bitterness is firm enough there.
Yeah. Very deliberate. I mean, all of our hop forward beers have bitterness. I don't like the whole approach to like make beer unbitter. Like if IPA is meant to be IPA, then it should have some IBUs. You know,
yes. Yeah. Right. I agree. It should taste like fucking hops.
Yeah. And I'm fine if you want to make IPAs that aren't bitter. But I'm not going to pay for them, and I'm not going to necessarily want to brew them either. And we've made a few that have been, you know, like, you know, borderline very low bitterness.
Okay.
But the dry hopping levels that we're putting in some of these beers is such that the beer still comes off as having bitterness, you know, and certainly, you know, tons of hop flavor, which could be misconstrued as bitterness maybe, but. I mean, we're real proud of our hops. I mean, we make a lot of beers that are heavily hopped. So this is just another little example.
I'm burping and I'm just tasting hops. It's like hop dust. It's just good, man.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. I can smell that.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Chicken dinner.
Yeah, this is, the beer has a great aroma. Like you said, it's, you know, the juicy melony, you know, aspect, but not not overwhelmingly so. And it's, you know, you talk about deliberacy, if that's a word, being deliberate with your hop additions and your brewing. You know, there is a section of these IPAs where they're going for the juiciest, which is just tastes like the softest water you could ever taste. And like we were saying, that's not really what I want. Even when I'm drinking these for the show, I want to feel like I'm tasting a beer, and that soft roundness only goes so far. And then it's just, to me, it's not really a beer thing anymore, but this does
Orangina.
Yeah. So right. Means. Yeah. Orange Julius. Juice. Yeah. But this definitely does fit that bill, the center of the Venn diagram, like you were saying, Kelsey. It's very
fill in the gap.
Yeah, it's very in the middle. How does this do in sales for you guys? Does it do pretty well? Are people into it?
We brewed one batch of it.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Fuck them then.
But people, the response to that has been great. Yeah. And people really,
they want.
Yeah, I had somebody come up to me the other day in the beer garden. Was like I drink a lot of cat's meow. That's what I drink. That's my thing. But he was like, but this market gap, I think it's going to take over as my favorite beer that you make.
Nice. That's a cool.
We'll still buy some cat, you know. Please.
Of course. And I wonder if it's going to bring people back. I wonder if beers like this are going to bring people sort of swinging back a little bit. Like, yeah, pillowy, juicy thing. That's cool and all, but. Let's firm this up a little bit, and then they drink this, and they go, oh, well, maybe I do like hops. Because I do feel that a lot of the hazy beers are for non-hop bitterness heads, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's like entry-level hoppy beers, yeah.
Right.
I have this funny story about that where I'm in line. I was at Treehouse, which I'm sure you've heard of Treehouse Brewing.
Yeah.
So in their old brewery, one and a half breweries ago, but when they were in the little building in Munson, which was their second brewery out of the four, I believe they've built at the time. They had, you know, pretty good line situation where you had to wait for a while to get beers. And I was there getting some beers and I was in line and I'm talking to someone. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I haven't had a lot of their beers, but I like them. Good people. I'm just grabbing a few four packs for some friends. And I'm like, you know, my go-to is like Sierra Nevada. The guy's like, yeah, I've never had that. I'm like, you're standing in line at a brewery for IPAs.
Wow.
And you've never had a Sierra Nevada.
It's like saying I've never worn a pair of Levi's jeans.
It's like I've never breathed. Yeah. The guy has literally never taken a breath. And I said, you need to go get yourself a six pack of Sierra. I prefer it in bottles, but get it in cans or whatever. And this was 5 or 6 years ago. And something like that. And so I'm like thinking to myself, is that actually a thing where everybody skipped? They went from, I'm not even a beer drinker, to drinking these hazy, juicy, you know, beers,
the
IPAs that are not really reminiscent of the IPA that we fell in love with beer drinking, like, you know, Sierra Pale, Anchor Liberty, Stone IPA, whatever.
I think we all grew up drinking Capri Sun, and then there's just a natural progression from Capri Sun to Treehouse.
Sunny D.
Or to any of them.
Sunny D,
There's no fault in that. I just think that the consumer is missing a giant opportunity to educate themselves. You know, it's like, you got it.
I was blown away, like, the first time, and this is kind of, you know, old Dan yells at cloud. The first time I met somebody at, this is when I was working at the beer store, first person who had never had a Budweiser before. And I'd just grown up drinking craft beer.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've never had to have a Budweiser. Like, I was 21 and there was already a craft beer movement. And like, why would I drink Budweiser? And I'm like, good point. Like, there's no reason to. But if that's your thing, you know, then good for you. But I think there's also that, that initiation that you go through from drinking a lot of crappy cheap beer from college and high school and
elementary school. Go ahead, true. Kelsey. Yeah, just let air it out. Statute of limitations is passed, man. It's fine.
My parents would allow me to have a little taste, you know, when I was a kid. So.
Sure.
But I think there's, you know, we're dealing with a whole new generation of craft beer drinkers that, you know, maybe the first thing they tried that was not a Budweiser, you know, was a Treehouse, you know, or mm-hmm. was a Trillium, or was a, you know, this hazy New England style IPA, and that brought them into the culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now that, you know, then they're like, oh, what else do you have? You know, and I think some of those, back to what we were talking about before, bring it full circle. I think those people are some of them at least are expanding out and saying, what else is there, you know, that I've been missing out on in this whole craft beer thing?
Yeah. And I think that's happening a lot where people, you know, they hear that, oh, this is great, you've got to try this. And then they try it and they're like, I dig that, but I want to explore more. They don't just get stuck in this one world, little thing. Like, you know, Coors and AB and all the, you know, Heineken, all these brands have brand loyalty like nobody. We don't right. have brand loyalty like that in no. this part of the industry. But breweries like Treehouse and even us on some levels have some brand loyalty. Like, we have customers that their regular go-to is Cat's Meow. And that's that just blows my mind. But I still would encourage to every 10 four packs of Cat's Meow to maybe try something else.
One of your brands.
15 but, in a row. But,
right. Yeah, for sure.
Maybe Hair Razor.
Yeah. Well,
some other beer that we make.
The other side of that is that you haven't been around as long as Budweiser or Sierra Nevada.
5 years. 5 years.
5 years. And you already have that hardcore subset of customers that only drink this beer. And that's cool. And imagine these kids, when they have kids and then they grow up, hearing stories about how their dad drank this or their mom drank this. That's pretty cool. It's just a longevity factor. But you know what's going to happen. Like, my kid will hear about it.
Sam Adams, it happened to Sam Adams. I mean, now people think of Sam Adams as dad's beer. And I'm like,
that's dad's beer, dude.
Oh, no, I'm a dad. And I get it. Like, I grew up drinking when I was, I'm going to say 21, but I was 18 when I went to UMass.
Yep.
And the Spirit House had Mix and Match Sam, Harpoon, Long Trails, Otter Creeks, Shipyard, whatever.
Yeah.
It was 1991 and or 92. And it was $4.99 a six pack, you know, and it was a $20 case of beer. It was maybe expensive even then.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like it was like $3 more than a 30 pack of or a suitcase of, they didn't have 30 packs yet, but a suitcase of Bud or whatever. So it was like a premium, but we were like, oh, we're drinking Catamount Amber. Like, this is amazing, you know? And part I didn't, you know,
part of me hopes that I live long enough that the New England style IPA becomes old man beer.
Yeah, it will. It's in like becomes 3 years. ESB, it's about that. Or
the English mild or the brown ale, you know?
Right.
God,
for that matter.
I love a brown ale, dude. Give me an English mild. I'll be happy. Do you think
we've wanted to make one since we opened and we haven't pulled the trigger.
Fucking do it, bro.
Well, buy it.
I will. I would. I honestly would. What disappointed me the most, there was a brewery down in LA area who opened and they were just doing traditional English style beers, cask condition. And I don't go down to LA very, very often, but you know, when I did, I would visit there and they fired their brewer and like hired another brewer and they started making IPAs. And I was like, it hurts my soul. It just, the tradition and the, but I love them. English mild all day, all day. Yeah. And that's what I brewed the one time I brewed this year, English mild. Love it. Can't get enough of it. But yeah, this IPA is good, man. I like it. I think, like I said, over and over again, it fits what your guys are going for. It fits that niche right in between. Cause it is, you know, juicy, squeezy. But it's also, there's a firm bitterness too. Kelsey, you said something interesting. You're like, I hope that New England IPA lasts long enough to be an old man beer.
I was hoping I last long enough.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. Well, shit, that ruins my question.
No, but that's okay. Yeah.
But it makes sense.
You have New England IPA.
People talk about it being a fad.
You?
I do not think of New England IPA as a fad.
See, that's me. I talk about that as being a fad.
But then why isn't West Coast IPA a fad?
Yes. Because
okay. then I can buy your argument.
Because New England style happened. I think if West Coast was the apex of the fucking whatever, then there's no reason to explore. But I think what happened with West Coast is we flew too close to the sun, and we packed too many hops in. And I think maybe no offense, but I think maybe the East Coasters and the Midwesters decided to try to outdo the West Coast. overdid
clearly
it.
Clearly we did.
Yeah. Well, and I'm honestly just making a joke. I really don't feel that way, but I do feel like there were some breweries who are like, well, let's IBU chase.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe
the 1 million IBU beer, whatever.
Right. Right. Yeah, and was, you know, you sort a, of, a... you sort of drive people away. I don't know. I feel like West Coast IP has got too bitter for most people. East Coast New England style IPAs happened. That brought in a whole group of people because it is sweet and soft and has flavor. And I don't like the style at all, but I understand it now. I get it because when it first came out, we had a lot of examples that were like, I don't really. And then something happened a couple of years ago where like brewers started to learn how to make it. You know, it's like Brut IPA.
If, ooh, it's don't like get me started.
I probably feel the same way you guys do, but I think that if that beer was marketed a little bit differently, or if people learned how to make it better quicker, I think it would still be a thing.
Yeah, it just went away. We made it one for away. Our second anniversary, and we loved it for like 3 weeks. That beer was outstanding, and then it just went.
Yeah,
it and literally fell right off.
Yeah, and I
super
don't
unstable.
I what yeah. is that? What it was for you guys?
That particular beer was real okay. unstable. Yeah. Yeah. So it fell apart real quick. And I think really? It has to do okay. with the fact that it's bone dry.
Yes.
There's a yeah. ton of dry hops in there right. and like, you know, some bitterness, but you know, it was just this weird,
now the hops fall off.
It was a weird style. And I think it was just one of those like, you know, flash in the pans where, you know, people made it, they figured it out because, Social Kitchen Brewer, I forget the name of the person that made it, but just shared the information. Here it is. Everyone make the things. And
Alpha amylase.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I wonder if that was just sort of like the Rubik's Cube solved for everybody. And they're like, oh, okay, I did it.
Right.
And that's it.
It's like molecular gastronomy, you know?
Right.
It's like a, can the science do this? Yes, it can. And
yeah.
This is kind of an interesting parlor trick. But do I want to eat a foam that tastes like a cheeseburger? No, I want to eat a cheeseburger.
I want to eat a fucking cheeseburger. Yeah. Yeah. And right. And I wonder if the result after figuring out the magic trick wasn't as satisfying as the result of a cloudy IPA is, or a New England style IPA. Yeah, so maybe. I think that there is. And you tell me, is there some sort of satisfaction in actually brewing the thing? Because I talked to Hanakoa, the guys from Hawaii, a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, I just really enjoy making this style. I like it when we can make it. It feels good. And nobody ever really put it to me like that before.
I don't know that. I mean, I think I definitely play favorites in the brew house about what beers I like to make the most. But I don't really differentiate between IPAs in the okay. brew house. Like if I'm making IPA, I'm making this IPA, that IPA. The malts in our brewery are pretty similar in all of our IPAs, like at least in certain varieties that we use, and we kind of have our own kind of approach to how we design beers from a grain standpoint.
Yeah.
So if I'm just throwing another type of hop in there and we're treating the beer a little bit different or fermenting it different, or we're using different mash regimens, that's fine, but it still smells like I'm making golden colored beer that's going to become hoppy. Whereas a Kolsch brew is different. A lager brew is far different. A dark beer brew is like a whole nother level. So I think that that's a way to differentiate okay. as far as I'm concerned. Like I like making any beer. I don't
yes.
hold any real, I just, the fact that I get to do this for a career is still really kind of surprising on some levels. I just still listen to my dad every once in a while at the very beginning of my career. And he would say like, he's like, I get that people have this as a career, but really like, this is what you're going to do. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right. I mean, let's go for it then, you know? Yeah. And he supported me and was super proud of me. And you know, so I see that as like, I don't play favorites. I still feel very privileged and psyched to do this every day.
That's a good dad, man. What does that feel like?
It was great. It was amazing.
I opened Cat's Meow.
Awesome.
Because we're talking New England IPA. Might as well drink a New England. Oh, here. Mm-hmm. I got to change my camera position because it's right over my board and I'm going to slip one day.
And you got the front and back there.
Oh, yep. No way. Really? Is it? Tell me there's a butthole on the other side.
It's on your side.
You're looking at it.
I don't want to spoil. Oh my God, there is, but no hole, but that's great. I love it. Kelsey, is that you? Yeah. That's your idea?
Well, I get, this one we also had the artwork for originally.
But the double-sided.
Another designer who drew the actual cat.
Yeah, but the double-sided can, is that
Chelsea
you?
Chelsea made it all come together.
Because that's you. You need a raise. That's. I think that's the cutest thing in the entire universe.
We it does are, well. Our Cat's Meow Nonic pints, and we sell those like nationwide because people hear that there's a pint glass with a cat on it. So
lunatics like you and me and Matthew, because we all have cats. Yes. And I think that's great.
Yep, I got another one right back here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we knew, people liked cats. We didn't realize that, like, you put cat on a hat, cat on the glass, cat on a t-shirt, you know, cat everywhere. And it works. I mean, we sell beer in Japan now randomly. We ship beer to Japan. And the cats actually do pretty well in Japan. You know,
I can imagine that. I can imagine. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So this is
people ask, what's your favorite, right? They ask that question a lot. And I answer the question with, what are you asking me?
Yeah, your favorite beer?
Which one do I like to drink? Which one do I like to brew? Which one actually pays the bills? Well, this is the one that pays the bills. And I love to drink it. I love to brew it. I love to pay bills with it. But every brewery has their kind of flagship, if you will. And every brewery has the beer that keeps the roof and the lights going and the people paid and vacations given and doors are open because of it. And that is this beer. It is over 50% of our volume now.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing to have a beer like that, because a lot of breweries these days, newer breweries, don't actually rely on the core portfolio like we used to.
Right.
Allagash White is 85% of Allagash's production. Like, that's the definition of how you become successful.
That is so weird to me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because I never see it out here. That's the other thing. I never see that.
Minimal amounts to California, I'm sure. Oh, okay.
California used to be their biggest market.
Is that true?
It used to be Allagash's largest market.
Yeah, and they pulled back, obviously.
Yeah. Smart. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah. They all have. I mean, we used to get tons of Avery out here and tons of like other beers from outside the market. And now it's slimmer. It's definitely mostly locally, you know, locally made beers.
Yeah.
That kind of flood the market.
That's shifting, which is good news for you guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's good news in every market because it supports the local economy, you know?
Exactly. And,
but I mean, with Cat, we knew it would be the biggest seller. I mean, it wasn't any surprise that if we call a beer the Cat's Meow and we make it taste good, and you know, Kelsey works as
it better taste good if we call it the Cat's Meow.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that
you can't put out a mediocre beer and call it the Cat's
that
Meow.
That looks a little hazy to me. What do you think?
Yeah.
Is that hazy?
Yeah. It's a little hazy. And you know what? I will say it's the my makeup tutorial light is doing a disservice to it because it looks like gravy, and it's not how it looks to like normalize. No, it's not. So if you're watching this on YouTube, there's definitely a more orange, light orange tint to it. So, I'm trying to figure out the hazy thing. I understand it, but it's not, it doesn't resonate with me, which is sort of why I enjoy talking about it on these shows. And I think I'm going to get a lot of shit for it because I've always campaigned against it, but over the years, I like talking to people like you guys who make it, who enjoy it, because it gives me a chance to try something new and to learn more about it. So I'm going to ask you, like, what should I be tasting in here? What are the flavors coming through? How should it develop? Because I have a sense of the beer already. I mean, I'm a super taster and I'm a professional, so I have a sense for it already. But I like to hear from you guys, too. What's going on in this beer?
I'm going to give that one to Kelsey since he is our Cicerone level 2.
Cicerone.
Oh, hell yeah.
He is our super taster.
Yeah, I am a certified Cicerone.
Congrats.
Thank you. I think the El Dorado comes off first. You get that kind of orange tang kind of character with a little bit of like grapefruit pith.
Yep.
What I really like about the Cat's Meow is that it does still have a little bit of a bitter backbone.
Yeah.
So you do get some of that bitterness that comes through. A nice light mouthfeel. There's a little bit of, it's not thick, like orange juice thick. But it has a little bit of that nice pillowy mouthfeel and, you know, for me, it's a beer that I drink all the time, and I am a New England IPA drinker. I love it. I love the style. So
I forgive you. It's fine.
Yeah. And you know, I, if somebody like says, "Well, what do you know about beer?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a certified Cicerone." So,
right.
And I'm the general manager of a brewery.
Yeah.
And I'm also a human fucking being. I want to drink this. Leave me alone. Yeah. Go away.
Yeah. But I like that kind of orange juicy kind of character. For me, it's just enjoyable. I can go back to it. My one complaint about the New England style IPA is that it's shit for pairing with food. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to do good pairings with it, but, you know, so when people are like, "Oh, let's do a beer dinner," I'm like, "Okay, yeah. How can I fit Cast Meow in there?"
But, right. What do you think the barrier is there? What's the problem? What's the clash?
I mean, the main thing you would normally want to pull off of, like the flavor profiles you want to pull out of that are the citrusy characters. Mm-hmm. But the bitterness on that, makes it tough to if you want to go citrusy, you could say, "Oh, it might be nice with some grilled shrimp or maybe like a pear salad or something like that."
I was thinking of salad too, bro. Exactly.
Yeah. Citrusy salad. Yeah.
But that bitterness then comes back at the end,
right?
And you kind of overpower a light dish like shrimp or like a pear salad or something like that. Or
anchovies. Cheese. A dish made with anchovies, I think would be rad.
No, anchovies. Yeah. Maybe like a Caesar salad.
See?
A Caesar salad with a heavy anchovy paste.
Kelsey, let's go. I'm going to recruit you for my new gastro pub. Sorry, Matthew.
Yeah, there you go.
For me, I think also one of the combative pieces of these beers is its texture when it comes to food.
Okay.
The mouthfeel, I think, it can be problematic when you're trying to pair it with food, because you're like, you know, it's just not that it's heavy, but it's heavy on the mouth. It is like, you know, the texturally it is.
It's coating. There's a weight. There's a weight to it. And it does change. It is
there.
And this one is it's almost, it feels like more bitter than Market Gap.
Probably. Yeah. I don't doubt it. Now, lower. Well, I wouldn't say lower IBUs. I would say different.
Okay.
You know, this beer is dry hopped with an excessive amount of Eldorado and Citra. And there's a touch of there's Mosaic in the Whirlpool. So it's got all, it hits on all the, you know, the hops that people are familiar with, I think, and also are used in this manner. You know, it's not such an uncommon thing, although the Eldorado is a twist, but
I could,
the way we use it.
I could definitely see people crushing nonics of this, like you were saying.
I love it.
Yeah,
I do.
I can definitely see that because it is, and it's that bitterness that cleans it up. And I think that's 40% of my issue with these beers is that they're that cloudy, juicy thing, like we already talked about, doesn't feel like a beer, but if you have that goose at the back end to kind of like make it remind you that you're drinking a beer, I think it's fine. And that's what this does. So I could 100% understand how people will just sit on your patio and pound 20 ounces of this. It's very, very drinkable. Yeah.
I've been known to do that.
I've seen him do that.
It's just Kelsey. That's it.
And don't look at the security cameras.
Yeah, that's a that's a good beer. What yeast did you say you use in this? You have the house yeast.
It's English yeast. Yeah, English yeast strain. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that still just makes it like that. Wow.
Yeah, they're not supposed to do that. You know, English yeast traditionally was supposed to be like heavily flocculent, so it would drop right and create a clear beer.
Yeah.
But we've managed to, you know, let's just say we've managed to fuck with it enough that.
Okay. So is it less strain dependent and more how you treat it in house?
I would say, yeah, I would say our process is what's helping us do this consistently.
Mm-hmm.
The way we dry hop beers, we get some biotransformation, we're getting yeast and hop contact. And we don't dry hop during fermentation. It's more towards the tail end of fermentation.
Okay. Right.
But that helps to, you know, give us a stable haze.
Do you want to tell me how you do that?
No.
Okay. That's fair. I had to ask. I had to do it. Cause if I didn't, I would get 100 emails from listeners going, "I want to do this too."
Well, tell them to email me, and I'm happy to help them out.
Oh, shit. Well, then why don't you just tell me?
I had a homebrewer come by who looking to do a cat's meow clone and brought us some samples of, after conversations that I had with Matthew, of his attempt.
Yeah, we have some of his beers.
How was it? Fridge.
We haven't tasted it yet. We gotta do it on Friday.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. But I'm happy to share. In fact, I love to share some of our processes. I think the big thing for us is the way we dry hop. We use an inducer. We're not just dropping hops in the top of the tank. We're actually spinning the beer, allowing the hops to fall into the stream of beer while it's spinning. And that's what's giving us, I think, a majority of our stability. Maybe not the haze necessarily, but it's given us that stability to allow us to hold the haze permanently in the beer.
Interesting. Okay.
And we don't use any additives. We don't use enzymes. We don't use tannel A or any of these other sort of tricks that people use flour. They use whatever. I mean, we use flour because we use grain, and there's flour in
grain. Yeah, that was a big thing early on in the hazy beer thing, where it's like, oh, people use flour. I'm like, really? Just throw handfuls of flour in the beer? Right. Like, you're not right making a roux or anything, dude. Right.
Yeah, you're making a roux, basically.
Yeah. That's what
call it gravy.
That was always weird. That's always what I call it. They're the gravy beers. But
I knew. Yeah, I remember reading about brewers that had done that. And that's one way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, those sort of like heady days of learning how to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think now, I hope at least now, the information is out there to sort of make these a little bit, you know, we figured it out.
Yeah.
We'll see. Anyway, let's take another quick break, everybody. We're going to be right back. I have one more beer to drink. It's a double IPA. And then we're going to wrap things up with the boys from Exhibit A Brewing in Massachusetts. Hang on. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
Hey, thanks for sticking around, everyone. It's The Session. We are on with Matthew and Kelsey from Exhibit A Brewing. And I'm about to pop a double IPA, which is called Hair Razor. And I love the logo. It's a little like a bunny rabbit, almost like a cyberpunk bunny rabbit. I don't know why that comes to mind.
No. Punk rock rabbit.
Yeah. And then the back is...
A lot of people reference, say, Donnie Darko, like right from Donnie Darko or something.
It really does, dude. That's what I got, too. And I'm like, well, I don't want to say that, but...
That was not the inspiration there.
No. But that's just that, in that, like, zeitgeist of I don't know, rabbit culture, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, weird rabbits.
Yeah, right. Tell me about Hair Razor, please. It looks like a cloudy, hazy double IPA.
Yeah, The malt in that beer is actually not that different from Cat's Meow. There's certainly a higher gravity, so it's an 8% beer, whereas Cat was 6.5%. It's loaded with hops. I mean, there's Galaxy in the Whirlpool, there's Galaxy Mosaic, Azaka. Help me, Kelsey. What else is in there? We've got.
Put Amarillo in there.
No Amarillo. There's TNT Cashmere.
TNT.
There's also cryo hops. So we use cryo Mosaic and cryo Ikuna and cryo Azaka. So those are the cryo hops are basically, it's a lot of the vegetal material is removed and it's basically pure oil. So they're really aggressive and fun to use on the dry hop side.
Yeah.
Also our English strain of yeast for that. It's part of the core. It's definitely our most popular selling double IPA. I think Galaxy is one of those hops that people like and they gravitate to it, which has been, I think is, you know, helpful for the brand.
Yeah.
If people are aware that it's got that in there, although we don't really advertise those things, but, it's funny cause it was my least favorite logo when we first, or brand, if you will, when Kelsey first created it. Originally we had an idea to use a spider, which was 86 immediately when we realized that my partner hates and is probably just afraid of spiders. So
he's arachnophobic.
Yeah.
Oh,
so he didn't want the spider. And the inspiration for me was actually it was a David Bowie reference, not Hair Razor per se, but using this kind of spider idea and Hair Razor and then Bowie died.
Yeah.
And I decided I can't make a Bowie reference now because it's too, it, you know, it just seems too, deliberate you know, like capitalizing on the man's death or something. So we didn't.
Yeah.
So Kelsey was like, I've got an idea. Don't look at my computer all day.
Basically. Don't come near me. Get the fuck away.
Test drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he created this punk rock rabbit character, and everyone around me loved it. Like Eric in our tap room, Adam in the tap room, Dunstan, who's one of our brewers at the time. Everybody liked it. And I'm like, I don't get it, but I'm just going to go with listening to you guys, because it seems like you're really passionate about it. Kelsey was proud of it. And anytime Kelsey's going to be proud of something, we're psyched about it. And we just went with it. And it's become a very popular image for us. And people love the image and they love the beer. You know,
and I don't know. Look at the rabbit's earring.
Yeah.
It's a tiny little spider.
Right.
So spider's that's my still reference. There. So that's my reference to the old label.
Wow. Wait. Yeah. 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 That's cool, man. Yeah. It's a good logo, and it's distressed a lot, but not too much. It's good. That's a good, nice little.
So nice, do you hold your can up? Which version of the can do you have?
Yeah,
so okay. You have the older version. So we've actually done a design element behind it. So now it's a black can still, but it has this kind of swirly, kind of interesting metallic.
Like a little steampunky.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Metallic.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't have any of those here to show. But so Kelsey, we've been working on kind of updating each one just one at a time, just for, you know, little changes, little updates.
You got to do it, man. You got to stay current.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a delicious beer as well. It's, you know, again, it's like you're saying, it's like Cat's Meow, but imperial. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's heavier, it's sweeter, it's hoppier, but not more bitter. I think the hop, I feel like a hop flavor comes through a little bit more.
Yeah, I think the alcohol sweetness is probably balancing that out.
Yeah.
I think it does have an assertiveness to it, but
it's pushy. I've never, this is a word I'm going to make. Okay, it's a description I'm going to use. It's a pushy beer.
Really smart. That's a good word for it. I mean, come to the brewery and do sensory with us at 8:30 in the morning.
I would love to.
When it's on hair raiser day.
Yeah.
Like it's usually Mondays when we're kegging and we have like two or three or four beers in front of us. And if it's hair raiser, it's like, I've been up since maybe 4 or 5 on a particular Monday. And it's like, now I'm drinking hair raiser and it's like 8:15 and it is aggressive. It's pushy. It's a beast. You know, we, in the brewery, we're all like, oh, do I really have to do sensory on hair raiser today?
Well, you can push it later in the day, you know?
No. Cause we can't do it. We can't keg until we've approved it, you know? So we're tasting it.
Oh, so you're tasting it off the John. Final approval. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep. Damn.
Pre-packaged sensory. Wow. So
bless everybody who works for you, Matthew, because that's
this morning was my favorite. We have a new beer coming out called Focal Point, which is our Dunkel Lager, slightly smoky.
Oh, come lager. On.
Yeah. And that one, we did sensory on that this morning and it was delightful. It was beautiful.
I'm disappointed that we didn't book you.
I don't know that Kelsey got us. I don't know that you got a sample.
I did not. No, I didn't get a sample.
Sorry. Well, you're in the office.
Yeah, this is a, you know, if you're going to do a hazy double IPA, this is how you should do it, because it's almost reminiscent of Market Gap in as much as it's hopped. The hop flavor is like a double IPA, but the malt and the mouthfeel is more like the hazy IPA, and it is sort of like between an IPA and a double IPA hazified.
Mm. There we go.
You know what I mean? It is. So I think you guys have this really cool niche of taking these IPAs.
Like 8%.
No, it doesn't. No. Yeah. But I think you can take these IPAs and you sort of like parse them out, you know, and you sort of take the essence of one and you can make it another thing and take elements of that and produce a totally different beer that's reminiscent of the first beer. I think it's a pretty unique trait to have.
Yeah. We like to have, you know, we want people to recognize our beers in our portfolio. You know, we want people to drink a beer and be like, oh yeah, that's an Exhibit A beer, you know, and that's not necessarily easy to do.
No.
And obviously got to rely on someone else's palate too, which is a whole nother realm. But for us, when we drink it, we want to make sure that like, yes, that is on point to what we're trying to do. It's deliberate. It's approached you know, the design and concept of the beer, whether it's the marketing side of the naming or just the liquid itself, it all has to fall in line with what we want for our brand, for our company, for our people.
Well, I'll tell you, the burps are tasty.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, guys.
That's the review.
Yeah, for sure. The burps are tasty. We'll let you guys go. Where can people go to find more about your brewery?
You can go to exhibit-a-brewing.com, which is our website. That's the home base for all of our information. We're also on Facebook. We're on Instagram as Exhibit A Brewing, Twitter Exhibit A Brewing, and we're now on TikTok as Exhibit A Brewing.
Nice.
So we're zero twerking allowed on our TikTok channel.
Oh, that sucks. That's too bad.
I don't know. If Matthew wants to twerk, I guess we'll throw it there up there.
There will be no twerking. The other ways that you can find out about our beers is going to your local retailer, certainly in our area in Massachusetts. We are in over 2,000 retailers now throughout New England.
That's crazy.
We actually sell beer to California through the Beverage Alliance. You can get our beer in LA County, in San Diego.
Nice.
I don't think we've shipped beer to San Francisco yet, but we can get our beer in Arizona. You can also get our beer in Osaka and Tokyo in Japan.
Wow!
Through in vending machines in Japan.
If you live in Virginia, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, DC, we're also being licensed.
Nebraska, Nebraska.
Nebraska, we can actually legally ship to you as well. So
there you go.
Ship it right to you.
So you can get it online. You go to the website and figure all that out.
You can go to the website. You can place an order. We'll drop ship it to you. And we recommend, because of the shipping costs, we recommend doing at least 3-4 packs.
Sure.
Those don't make sense because you're going to pay like $15 in shipping. But
Might as well get all you can.
Don't spend $16 on beer and $15 on shipping.
No, definitely don't do that. All right, guys. Well, thank you for the time. We'll let you go. I really appreciate it, guys. Exhibit A Brewing from Massachusetts. Thank you guys for listening very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you to our sponsors, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com and learn and get everything you need to make great beer at home. Absolutely everything. You want to make beer, you want to make wine, you want to make cider, you want to make kombucha. Let me rewind the kombucha because I don't really know that to be true. But I guarantee you that someone that works at More Beer knows how to make kombucha, whether or not you can get the mother or whatever. Just ask them questions. They'll be fine. But anyway,
we buy stuff from them too. We buy valves from them and clamps and parts. Yeah.
Cool
people over there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, everybody, thanks a lot for tuning in, and until next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you. Bye bye.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.